Phoebe. Yes. 2 tenths. Oh, right next door.
Good evening and welcome to the Wednesday, November 15th, 2017 meeting of the Public Works Advisory Board. All members of the board are present, so we have a quorum. There's no announcements or presentations. We'll go straight to public comment period. Members of the audience wishing to address the board on city business matters not on the agenda may do so at this time. If you will come up to the podium and state your name and city, and please write your name and city on the pad that's up there for our just for clarity's sake.
Good evening, PWAP. I'm Nancy Castle. I'm a member of the community, a certified living treasure by the Chamber of Commerce in 2016, and I'm here talking about Thanksgiving. Next week, of course, is Thanksgiving, and we're having a dinner for a small group of friends, expecting about 600 to come and enjoy a delightful repast, a classic meal of turkey, stuffing, gravy, vegetables, mashed potatoes, and cranberry sauce, plus pumpkin pie. If anybody in the viewing audience needs a meal to go, there are deliveries done by the police officers and the police volunteers. So you can call the Senior Center 772-4421 to get on the list to have a meal delivered. And I want to give a special thanks to Mr. Parker here on the PWAB. He brought a check, a donation from the Morro Bay Car Show in the amount of $500 to help us put this party on. And we're incredibly grateful. Thank you very much.
Okay, are there any other members of the public that would like to make a comment at this time? Seeing none, we'll close public comment period. First item is the consent calendar, or on the consent calendar is A1, the approval of the minutes of October 18th. Are there any corrections or comments on the minutes? Seeing none, would someone entertain a motion to approve the minutes?
I'll make a motion that we approve the minutes.
I'll second it.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed say nay. Motion carries unanimously. Next item on the agenda is the business item B1, is the director's report. And we'll move this over to Rob.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, board members. A couple of things to highlight. As you notice, this month we've included several pictures in there. Mr. Miller is upping our game, so we're going to have to get the other divisions to include photos as appropriate. The street project is underway and had a little bit of disruption on South Bay Boulevard on Friday, but Friday was the best day to do it because school was out and didn't interfere with school traffic. They'll be back on South Bay for the second coat next Monday or Tuesday, depending on weather. We've lost a couple days because of this little bit of rain that's coming in. So we've revised the schedule, posted it to Facebook, our website with references on Facebook and Nextdoor. So you can see that revised schedule for the next work that's going to be taking place on the sealing and chip sealing process. Also, our sidewalk ADA project that's funded through community development block grants is underway in the block to the north of City Hall and Public Works Community Development. They've been working there We need to do a little bit of more design work on the Main Street section they'll be doing, but we've added some additional spots to keep the contractor busy until we have that design work complete. On the Wharf project, last night council did approve a contract with Waterworks Engineers in the amount of $1.34 million to design the lift station and force mains. As Board Member Shively recalls, he sat on that review committee a little over 6 months ago.
I was going to ask if it still held with Waterworks because I hadn't kept track of it.
Yes. So we had our kickoff meeting with them this morning, and they're getting right to work on that, evaluating force main routing and lift station locations. So doing that final evaluation. And those are the items that to highlight. I'll be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Okay, do any members of the board like to ask a question? Looks like Steve would.
Just real quickly, as I remember, that's a design bid build type.
That's project, design right? bid build. It lends itself to that process. It is a type of construction that local contractors could bid on and successfully complete with. It is a large lift station, but it's not that different than work that they normally do, and it's within the bonding capacity of most large local general engineering contractors.
And to bring me back up to speed, how long do you see for the construction timetable for doing those, you know, that construction? The duration, is it like a year project?
Probably about a year project. We have a little bit more float in that phase of the project
right.
than we do in the Wharf. Where we don't have float is in the funding and environmental review portions of that. So we'll need to get their preliminary information soon to feed into the EIR and our funding applications with EPA and State Board.
And as I remember, it doesn't provide for the return line of the water back to, if you're going to do like indirect.
It does not include the line to indirect potable. It includes a return line for brine and wet weather disposal, but does not include
right.
Those projects probably will come back together once we have to do pilot testing on potential injection sites.
Oh.
To meet the state's requirements. So before we can confirm whether the injections are going to be in the east side or the west side of the freeway, we need to do some actual field work. That was put on hold during the looking at the sites again. So we're getting RFPs from hydrogeos
yeah,
to do
it's
that.
It's just more, I've tended to forget some of the finer points.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll continue on the left with Janice.
On the transit report, it says work has begun on the short-range transit plan. Are there any clues as to what was discussed? Are there more hours, shorter time, more rates going up?
It's a state required. We use state and federal funds. It's a requirement of the Transportation Development Act to evaluate our transit system to make sure we're meeting goals, we're meeting fare box ratios, so we're taking in enough fares to keep the system viable. It's an evaluation of the existing system. They may have some recommendations on service hours and routes, but really it has to be able to be not completely self-supporting, but be able to meet that fare box ratio as required.
So this short range transit doesn't mean you're going to change the transit system.
No, it's a required every 5-year evaluation of the transit operations.
Okay, thank you. And then
short range as far as time frame goes on
the
planning
reports.
Horizon, yes.
Okay, and then my other question was, I keep reading, this is just for clarification. When you're talking about water conservation and the conservation was 16% lower, Does that mean we can serve, our water use is 16% lower, or we're 16% more than what we did last year?
It's 16% lower than 2013, actually.
So that's still good. That's
mm-hmm. Yeah. It always compares it to the base year of 2013 as of now, and so it's 16% less than how much consumption there was in 2013.
Okay, because I was wondering if conservation, lower conservation rate meant that you were conserving less. Okay, thank you.
Okay, Christian.
You know, I don't have any questions in regard to the report, but I did have one question. You know, I live over at the end of Siena against Highway 1, and so the Caltrans property goes down that area. So they've been overwatering their bushes so much that they come through the dirt they're washing away, then across Siena and down a few streets. So I don't know, do they use city water for watering out there, or where's their source?
Yeah, their source is metered, and okay. We have a real good track record of, unfortunately, if you call Caltrans and report that, you might not get a response, but if you go through their web portal and put a work order in that way, it almost immediately gets taken care of. So we can look into that, and Damaris is taking a note to do that. So we'll make sure that, because that is in violation of the water conservation goals, so we'll make sure that they don't have any more runoff. Okay, thank you.
Okay, John?
I actually enjoyed going through the agenda. I didn't have any big questions when I went through it. Also, just watching the coding process, they seem to be much more efficient this year, even if sometimes you can't read what their plans are.
Yes. We have some help with inspection, contract inspections, so they're keeping pavement coatings on their toes, although they did have a little... bit of sloppy work on DeMar, so they've had to go clean up what they went a little bit further into the gutter than they should have.
Okay. Chris?
Yeah, thank you for the photos in the report, and I think you hit the main topics of the streets and the sidewalks. Just want to point out to the public that we're still on the state water shutdown, and for about another week, it sounds like.
Joe is going to answer that question.
Yeah, the state water comes back up on Monday, the 20th.
Stu?
The Nutmeg tank replacement that we've been going through for a year and a half, is that tank in jeopardy of failing, or will it go on for a while, Rob?
Probably not in catastrophic failure. It is an old tank, and it does have maintenance needs, so we've had to plug some holes in it. So sooner rather than later, we need to deal with that issue. So one of the items that Corolla is looking at is with their water system model, is verifying the size of storage that will absolutely be needing up there before we embark on building a million gallon storage tank when we need 1.5 million, or we only need 750,000 gallons. So we want to confirm the sizing of it before we move forward with the project.
Are we putting away funds to replace that tank? Is there a budget for it?
Yes, there is. Our water rate increase that we did in 2015 included that as a capital project. So it's being funded through rates. It still might require some debt service to actually build that. I don't think we can build that out of pocket. But we're reassessing our rates this year, taking another look at them, looking at what capital projects we have accomplished, which ones we might want to defer to see if we can keep our debt at a minimum.
Good. I also want to make a comment about the squirrels in Del Mar Park and the gophers. they're incredible over there, and I would believe that the city's going to get in trouble with that if we don't do something with those critters in the ground. I had a neighbor who stumbled in one of those holes, and they almost went over, and walking her grandson through it. So that's something to look at, maybe get some flares and stick down the holes, or do something to kill those gophers over there, because they're everywhere.
Yes, we... there are friends of the gophers also, so we need to be cognizant on how we manage our pests.
That's all I have.
Okay, I only have a couple little ones. On page 4, the bottom of stormwater, the last sentence talks about attending training on visual trash assessment protocols to meet the requirements of the trash amendment. What would be an example of a visual trash assessment protocol?
So the COSCA, Stormwater Association of California, they have put together some protocols that so that when everyone assesses the trash in your area, everyone's kind of doing it in the same way. So they've created, along with Second Nature, another group that we work with, some apps that you go out and you basically drive the streets in your high priority areas. You drive the streets, you see where there is trash, and then you go certain distances up and down, and there's a certain measurement of how much trash that is, so that kind of everyone's high, medium, and low is the same amount of high, medium, and low, whether you're in Morro Bay. So everyone can replicate it, so they have protocols that everyone is going to follow. So they're just starting to put those protocols together, so we are all just starting to kind of slowly use them so that we see if they work for everyone.
When you talk about trash, is that vegetative litter besides human-created?
Yeah, no, it's not leaf litter or anything like that. It's actual human-created trash, so
okay.
Wrappers and stuff like that.
Okay, thank you.
Butts.
Then on the next page, under the nutmeg tank also, the last item says 1H2O. Now, I know that, you know, if I look at the item up above, it means one water. And I'm wondering, is it really necessary to make it any more confusing than one water by changing 8 letters to 4 letters? I mean, as it is, one water, people don't really know what that is. It's a water supply plan. Oh, okay, one water. So anyway, I
apologize for that. I was maybe I was just trying to be a little too clever there.
Okay, thank you very much. That's all that I have on that. Thank you very much. The next item on the agenda is the B2, which is our water supply plan update. So I'll send that over to Rob and let him direct who he's going to have do that.
And Damaris is going to introduce the item, and then we'll bring up Eric Saris from Corolla to walk us through his presentation.
Thank you. So good evening. We're just going to go through the One Water. It's an update to the One Water plan to let you kind of know what's been done so far and where we're at with it all. The city's contracted with Corolla to write the One Water plan, so Eric with Corolla is here for a presentation that he will present. I'll turn it over to him now, and we can answer questions after.
Thank you.
And I think we have about a half an hour's worth of presentation, and then followed with the questions.
Yeah. Oh, thank you, Damaris. Mr. Chair, members of the board, thank you for having me here this evening to talk a little bit about the city's One Water plan. So it's a poignant question that you just asked about kind of what does One Water mean. I'm going to start off. There we go. So One Water is a term that's become pretty popular in our industry, and essentially in this context, it's essentially taking an integrated planning approach and looking at a city or an agency's combined water resources between the collection system, the wastewater treatment plant, water, and stormwater. And so roughly a year ago, staff was given direction by council to look at its facilities in this way. And so we've started our work back in about June, working on the city's One Water Plan. I've got a couple of logos up here from some other cities in California. Again, this is something that's been undertaken by a number of other different cities. City of Oxnard, the one below that, One Water LA, is a massive kind of One Water Planning project that's just wrapping up for the city of LA. It's kind of the poster child for this approach at looking at water resources, city of Oceanside, and then of course Morro Bay. So what are the goals and objectives of the city's One Water Plan? Really, it's to look and determine the necessary capital and maintenance improvements that are required for the water, stormwater, and sewer infrastructure, kind of outside of the work that's being done on the wharf. Recommend some different supply options for the city's water supply. So right now, the city's water supply majority comes from state water, looking at other options to help diversify that water supply portfolio. And then also inform the general plan and the city's local coastal plan update. One of the things that's not on here, and we'll get into in this next slide here, is the One Water plays a critical role in the city's other utility planning efforts. So there is some synergy between the work that we're doing here with One Water Plan and the city's efforts on the wharf, particularly in looking at how the changes in the collection system may impact the flows to the new wastewater treatment plant, and then also looking at how the alternative that's being carried forward for the treatment plant, how that may affect the city's water supply in the future. So this One Water Plan, again, draws on some existing studies, like the Wastewater Facilities Master Plan, like the Master Reclamation Plan, but it also has a number of these different elements: flow monitoring, hydraulic modeling, long-term supply planning, and looking at the city's existing facilities, like Ocean Desal. So just really quickly, the goals of tonight's meeting are really to review the elements of the One Water Plan. And there's really four key elements, and those are the three master planning components, looking at the facilities that are out there in the streets between the water system, the collection system, and the stormwater system, and then looking at the water supply evaluation, looking at different options for supplying potable water to the city of Morro Bay. I want to review the elements of the components of each element briefly, and then we'll kind of talk a little bit about where we are and some of the next steps. Just a couple of items on, and just to ground everybody on where the city's current water supply really comes from. The city has a contract for roughly 1,300 acre feet for state water project. The majority of the city's water now comes from that source, with the ability to get water from two different well fields, the Morro well field and the Choro well field, as well as an Ocean Desal facility that can be used during emergency periods. The city has some current water treatment infrastructure that we wanted to highlight a little bit. One of the first things that we did when we were brought on board in June was to do an in-depth evaluation of the city's existing water treatment facilities, the Brackish Water RO facility and the Ocean Desal facility, and we have some initial findings from that evaluation that play into the development of these different water supply scenarios. In looking at the Brackish Water RO system, that's the system that treats the water that comes from the Morro well field. It's in generally good condition. The RO racks themselves, some of the electrical components that were recently upgraded would likely be able to be reused. But based on some input from the Coastal Commission, likely if those facilities are going to be used in the future and are gonna be used in some type of permanent fashion, that those would likely need to be relocated to a different location. Because of flooding concerns and, again, Coastal Commission concerns. In terms of the seawater desal facility, there's some aging infrastructure there, and due to the age of the vessels, there's some issues with reusing those. So those RO vessels on that Ocean D South side would need to be replaced, and significant upgrades would need to be made if that facility were to become kind of part of the city's regular water supply source. Again, the Morrow well fields, the city has a permitted capacity of 581 acre feet per year. The salinity in that location has seasonally been around 1,000 milligrams per liter, and traditionally the issues there have been with nitrates. So that's why the city uses the brackish water RO to treat that and remove those nitrates from the water to bring that below the primary MCL. And they also have the Chora well field that's available, about 1,100 acre feet, a little over 1,100 acre feet. There are some stipulations to when that water from Chora can be used. Primarily that the flow in Chora Creek needs to be above 1.4 cubic feet per second. Again, there's some quality concerns that have been an issue historically in the Chora well field, so another thing to take into consideration if that were to be used in the long term for the city. And then the Ocean Deep South facility, which has a permitted capacity of about 645 acre feet per year. The Ocean Desal is used currently only for emergencies, so that's something to take note of. If it were to be put into service in some type of regular basis, there would be some work that would need to be done with the Coastal Commission and the Regional Board. So you can really think of this One Water Plan as being two parts, the first of it being kind of this infrastructure planning component, and then the water supply evaluation. So we'll talk a little bit about the infrastructure planning component first. And we'll talk about the water and sewer master plan components together, because those are kind of the most similar. So in terms of the components of a water system master plan, we started out back in June with a lot of data analysis. We requested a lot of information from the city. We conducted a number of site visits, spent about 3 days worth of site visits, touring all of the city's water, sewer, and stormwater facilities. We looked at historical and projected water demands, and then we go and we put together a hydraulic model of the system. We construct that hydraulic model. We develop planning and design criteria with staff that we use to input into that model, and then we start looking at the existing system to find deficiencies within the existing system, and then look at future flows, apply future demands to that model, and identify some future deficiencies. We recommend improvements to overcome those deficiencies, and then kind of the heart of, or the big payoff of the master plan is really the development of a CIP, so an identification and of the costs associated with the improvements necessary to both to correct existing and future deficiencies. And then we wrap it up and combine it into this One Water Plan. This is just a screenshot of the fully dynamic hydraulic model that we've created of the city's water system. Again, it includes all the city's tanks, all the city's wells, and all of the city's pipelines. So where are we to date on the water master plan, which is of the different master planning components, is the one that we've progressed the furthest. We've gone through the data collection. We've looked at a demand analysis, water demand analysis, that I'll get into here in a second, a little bit more detail. We've established unit water demands and peaking factors. We've developed those future water demand projections. We've built the hydraulic model, and we've done a preliminary calibration of that hydraulic model, which is essentially taking real data and using our model to try to predict the real-world conditions and match what's happening in the field with the model. In terms of next steps, we're going to look more into the preliminary calibration results, and we're going to finalize those results. We're going to refine and finalize the design criteria and planning criteria that we're using against the model, as well as some of the fire flow and emergency scenarios that we need to look at, the city would like us to look at. We'll evaluate the existing and future systems against the existing and future demands, and then we'll develop the CIP and the costs associated with that. And then, of course, wrap it up into the One Water Plan report. In terms of the sewer model construction, we use a different software from the same software manufacturer to construct our model of the collection system. Again, this model includes all the pipelines within the city's existing collection system, as well as the lift stations. And what have we done on the master plan? So a lot of the this components of the water and sewer master plans are similar. And in terms of our progress on the sewer master plan, we're running pretty close to the at the same rate as the water master plan, but we're not as far along. Again, we've done things like construct the model, and we're in the middle of our model calibration. We've essentially calibrated the model to be able to predict kind of average day conditions, what's happening during dry weather, and then we'll be looking at what happens under different storm events and how the system reacts to come up again with the existing deficiencies, future deficiencies, projects, cost of those projects, and then wrapping that up into a report. On the stormwater side, this is the element that we're currently involved with in terms of the model construction. We haven't completed the construction of that model, but really what we're the components of this, again, similar in terms of looking at a lot of background data, looking at stormwater flow projections, and then developing the hydraulic model. And then once we have that hydraulic model developed, we subject it to 10 and 100 year storm events to again see what happens under those conditions. We recommend improvements, develop a CIP, and then it gets wrapped up in the report along with the other master plan components. So the stormwater model, it's constructed essentially in the same software as we use for the collection system model. It's a gravity flow model. We've used the city's existing GIS data, as-built drawings, and then some site visits to confirm the conditions out in the field. Again, in progress, we're currently building the model and filling in some of the gaps that we have with the as-built data that we have with some more site visits potentially. In terms of what's been done, we've conducted our initial round of site visits, and we're currently constructing the model. The next steps are really evaluating that existing system by applying those storm events to figure out where the deficiencies are, developing projects, developing costs, and then rolling it up into the report. So we'll switch gears a little bit. We're talking a lot about the city's horizontal infrastructure that's out there in the streets. And the second component of the One Water Plan, which is kind of the heart of the One Water Plan, is looking at the water supply options and what can the city do to diversify its water supply and potentially augment their existing state water supply. So in terms of what we're doing, we started off with developing future water demand. So based on the city's current population, current water use, rates of conservation, and other things, we've developed future water demands to see current usage versus where it's going to be over the planning horizon, which is 2040, so roughly a 20-year planning horizon. We've identified different water supply alternatives. And then we spent a lot of time developing the evaluation process, or what that evaluation process looks like. So once we have these different alternatives, how do we then go about with staff looking at these different alternatives, ranking these different alternatives, and evaluating these different alternatives? So we'll talk a little bit about the criteria and the methodology that goes into that process. Then we have to evaluate those alternatives. So one big component of the evaluation is obviously the capital or project cost of those alternatives, but there's another number of different qualitative criteria that will also be evaluated along with cost. We'll come up with a recommendation of one or several different water supply options, and then that will also get wrapped up into this One Water Plan report. So as I mentioned, one of the first items that we looked at for this water supply evaluation before we can develop these alternatives is how much water is the city going to need over the planning horizon. So we did an analysis of historical water demands. And as you can imagine, water uses has changed significantly here as well as other places in California over the last 5 to 10 years. And so this has been something that's taken a lot of attention in this project as well as a number of other projects, is water supply or water use right now is very low. And what will that water supply look like on a per capita basis going forward so that we can project what future demands will look like? So in 2040, we're predicting a population based on some information in the draft general plan of a little over 12,000. And then looking at some of the historical demand projections, we look at those on a per capita basis. Working with staff, we identified that about 106 gallons per capita a day is a good number for basing the future projections on, and that falls kind of in this middle red line here that shows the average between historically where it's been in the high range and historically where it could be in the low range, kind of in that 2014-2015 when we see water usage at its very, very lowest. Now, we don't think that water usage is going to stay that low. There's going to be some bounce back if we continue to move out of the drought, but we definitely will not be seeing something as high as we saw back in, you know, the 2005-2006 time period. Based on this demand projections, we're projecting a water supply demand of about 1,400 acre feet per year in 2040. So just to kind of bring that back to the city's current water supply, the current allocation from state water is a little over 1,300 acre feet per year. So this supply analysis or this study is important because essentially the city will have a higher demand than its current state water allocation between sometime during this planning horizon. So as I mentioned, after looking at the future demands, we came up with different alternatives and how the city could augment its water supply in the future. Again, the baseline first option is state water. So what is the cost of state water going to look like? What is the reliability, long-term reliability of state water going to look like? So that's option one, and the option which we want to evaluate other options against. Option two is a little bit interesting because it's kind of two sub-options. The city currently has the ability to use the Mora well field, like right now, when state water is out of service on a temporary basis. That water is taken out of the ground and it's run through brackish water RO, really to treat for nitrates. If nitrates are the primary concern, there are some different options for how you treat that water and some more cost-effective options of how you might treat that water. So option 2A really represents what the city does now on a temporary or an emergency basis, but implementing that at kind of full scale and taking advantage of that full 581 acre foot allocation or a permit allocation from that Mora well field. Option 2B is essentially similar to what you do now, except for you're changing out the existing treatment process, which includes reverse osmosis, for a different treatment process that really targets and removes nitrate at a lower operation and maintenance cost. So that's option two. Option three looks at utilizing the Chorro well field that has been utilized historically. The way that this option works is really the impediment to using that Chorro well field is that minimum stream flow requirement in Chorro Creek of 1.4 CFS. So as you can imagine, when it's raining and there's enough flow in Chorro Creek, it's not the time the city most needs that water. So how do we take advantage of that large Chorro allocation? The option here would be to take treated wastewater from the new wastewater treatment plant, put it into Chorro Creek to be able to overcome that 1.4 CFS requirement, and then pull the water out of the Chorro well field using the existing Chorro wells. Option four is interesting because here's kind of the nexus between the work that we're doing and the work that's being done by the Master Reclamation Plan or as part of the WRF project. So as we were talking earlier, the recommended project for the WRF is to go all the way to indirect potable reuse and use that water, inject it into the ground, and then pull it out again at the Chorro well field. But one of the questions we're trying to answer is, once that water goes into the ground, you pull it out of the Chorro well field, you really have three scenarios. One scenario is that water is good to go and ready to go into the system without any further treatment. But there could be the possibility that by drawing that water out of the ground, there's possibility for seawater intrusion, so there may need to be some type of treatment after that water comes back out of the ground. And 4B assumes that by pulling that water out of the ground, there may be some influence from seawater intrusion, so you have some salinity concerns. So you'd have to do some type of brackish water RO, like what is currently done. 4C assumes that There's nitrate contaminants that may have to be removed, and so you could use a nitrate treatment technology, something, an alternative to that brackish water RO to treat that water and use that water. And then number five, as I mentioned, is, as I mentioned previously, would be to reuse the city's, to utilize the city's existing ocean desal permit and whatever components of the ocean desal facility that could be salvaged, and implementing that as a kind of a permanent component of the city's water supply. So those are the alternatives that we're going to be evaluating. In terms of the water supply evaluation criteria, when we started looking at the criteria, we worked with city staff and presented about 18 different water supply criteria. Those 18 criteria were the criteria, the suite of criteria that we used to do the evaluations for the One Water LA project. And we looked at that and we said, how can we simplify this a little bit and make the analysis more straightforward, easier to understand, try to differentiate the options as much as possible. And we narrowed it down to about five different categories. It's about six total criteria within these five categories. Five categories are economic, protection against natural hazards, resiliency, which is an important one, which I think is really one of the bigger drivers for this One Water plan in general, is the resiliency and the resiliency of state water, the predicted resiliency of state water, environmental concerns, and then the implementation, constructability, regulatory approval, those kinds of kind of non-economic hurdles that a project can face. So those are the criteria, and we worked with staff and looked at how are we going to do this evaluation. So what we came to was a combination of looking at the project costs for each of these alternatives combined with a quantitative analysis of these other six criteria. What we are still working on now with staff is developing a percentage weight for each of these different criteria. So of these six criteria, is economic 40%, is environmental 10%. That's what we're working through currently. And then we're also working on quantitative ranking criteria for each of those different criteria. So for example, resiliency for any option will receive a score of 1 to 5. What does a 1 mean? What does a 2 mean? What does a 3 mean? What does a 4 mean? What does a 5 mean? So we're going through and developing what those mean for each of those criteria. We take that ranking, we apply the percentage for each one, and that's how we come up with a score at the end of the day. So each alternative at the end of the day will have a total project cost associated with it, and then a numerical score that's based on the weighting of the criteria and the score that each individual criteria receives. Below is just an example of kind of the ranking table that we're using. So this 1 to 5 scale, everything's really keyed off of state water, since that's considered the baseline. So anything that's on par with state water in terms of resiliency or cost or environmental impacts will receive a score of a 3. So then anything that's less favorable would receive a 1 or a 2. Something more favorable would receive a 4 and a 5. So that's how that process will work. In terms of what we've done to date, again, we've identified the alternatives. We've gone through the process of selecting the evaluation criteria. We've developed that evaluation process. What is that framework going to look like? And we're currently working on the cost estimates for each of these alternatives. We've got a cost model developed, and we're working out the construction costs for each of those alternatives at this point in time. In terms of next steps, we're working on determining what those long-term costs of state water are. There's a number of different factors that go into what those long-term costs may be. And so we're working on that now so that we have a good baseline in terms of dollar per acre feet that we can key the other alternatives off of. Again, we're working on the numerical ranking values. So what does it mean to have a score of a 2 for environmental, for example? And then we're working with staff to determine the relative importance of each of those ranking criteria and assign a percentage to each of those. We'll then be moving into this evaluation of alternatives and then recommending the different suite of supplies, whether that be one alternative, two alternatives, three alternatives that come together, and how that marries with state water. And then we'll wrap all that up into the final component of the One Water Plan report. In terms of next steps, things that we've got on the calendar right now. So obviously we're here tonight to give you an update of what the project's all about and where we are right now. Plan on giving a similar presentation to City Council in January of this upcoming year, with very similar information. What is the project about? Where are we now? And where are we going? We are in the process of reviewing the short-term and long-term deficiencies for the water and sewer and stormwater systems. So what pipes need to be replaced? What pipes need to be upsized? Are there any new lift stations needed? What's the size, for example, of the Nutmeg tank, not only to serve today's needs, but to serve the needs in 2040? We're going to present the water supply alternative cost estimates that we're currently developing. So that's on the horizon very soon here. And then likely be coming back to you probably in about the March, April time period with some initial findings of where the evaluation is pointing us in terms of different water supply options, what looks attractive, and then what are some of the necessary improvements to the city's infrastructure. And then coming back with a kind of a city council update sometime after that time period. So with that, I'll open it up to questions.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'll start with Stu on my right here, and then go on down the line. Do you have any questions at this time?
Several.
Okay.
A question about the stormwater that you mentioned. That stormwater currently, or according to your projections, does it just go out to the ocean, or are we going to make some effort to dam some of the stormwater up and save it, or inject it down into the ground so that we can reuse it later? What's the policy do you see there?
One of the things that we looked at early on when developing water supply alternatives, because that's where the kind of keys in there, is how does stormwater play into a water supply alternative, is based on the city has kind of limited infrastructure on the stormwater side, and most of it does go to the ocean. There aren't a lot of pipelines, a lot of it's curb and gutter, street flow. We looked at that. We looked at the ability to detain and recharge that water potentially, and that was one of the options that kind of didn't make it past our initial evaluation, was it wasn't likely going to be cost effective to implement stormwater reuse as part of a water supply alternative.
Thank you. You mentioned in 2040, we're going to have a population of 12,129. Does that include the motels, hotels, and other people that come here for tourists?
Yeah, it does. It's kind of the equivalent population, if you will. Yeah.
So the population of the residents that actually live here for the other 8-9 months of the year is what?
Well, no, that represents the population of the people that will actually live here, but their water use is kind of tied up in the hotels and motels and everything else. And the historical water demand, we kind of look at it in the same way. So individuals' water demand also includes some of the water demand for, you know, kind of the people that are here with hotels and motels. And also that water usage really factors in, not to the average water usage, but to a lot of the peaking and seasonal peaking that we see with water demands.
Do you have an idea of what the cost is to remove nitrates from the water as opposed to what the cost is to remove salt from the water, like taking it from the ocean?
That's a good question. I would say that if the city did not have existing infrastructure that they could use to remove salinity from brackish water from salty groundwater, then I would say that it would likely be more cost effective to just remove the nitrates with a different process. But because the city has a relatively new brackish water RO system, and a lot of that can be reused, that's currently what we're trying to figure out right now, is what's the more cost-effective option, not only from a capital cost perspective, but from a long-term operation and maintenance perspective as well. So we'll be coming back to you with that answer here shortly.
Okay, that's all I have. Thank you.
Thanks.
Chris?
Yeah, I just have a quick question. When we got into the section, currently we're doing 2A as we speak, just because we're off the state water. You mentioned 2B would be some other alternative of using the same Moro well basin. Mm-hmm. One question I have, it's convenient that we're on it right now, is I'm a tap water drinker. Like, there's definitely a noticeably taste difference between right now's current well water and the state water. Obviously, we still hit our numbers and the data and everything's fine, mm-hmm. but do any of those other treatment processes that are available, would they do anything to taste?
I would say that the primary difference is going to be, the state water. It's likely due to the hardness of the state water, because it's the surface water. The dissolved minerals in it are going to be a lot less. And any groundwater option is probably going to have a very similar taste, I would assume. So I don't know if I have a better answer from the taste perspective.
Probably not any way to quantify that, obviously, but it's a factor. But mm-hmm. if there's a cost savings, obviously bottled water, if necessary, or filtration, I guess at home would be an option.
Yeah, I just want to make one quick clarification about when you say that 2A is what the city's doing now. Even if the city decided right now that they wanted to kind of use that Moro well field on a continuous basis for an extended period of time, that facility would still need upgrades in terms of disinfection facilities and other things. I know talking with Joe and being out there, there's a lot that needs to be done to run that facility as kind of a temporary facility. So it would need automation and other improvements to help it if it was going to be kind of a, like I said, a regular source of supply for the city and would operate kind of on a day in and day out basis.
John?
I appreciate your presentation. It's been fairly thorough.
Thank you.
And I only have 20 questions now. There was an article I was reading today. Scientific American has got an article on groundwater storage in California, specifically regarding Santa Clara Valley Water District and the Pajaro Irrigation District. I thought they were interesting. So how does One Water tie into the State Groundwater Management Act? Is one question.
That's a good question. I guess first to answer the question about Pajaro and Santa Clara Valley Water District, those are indirect potable reuse projects, very similar in scope to what the city is the recommended project the city is currently pursuing for the WRF project. So that's interesting that it's in Scientific American. That's the direction that's currently on the table for the WRF project. In terms of SGMA, other folks are looking at these different water supply alternatives as a means to move away from groundwater or to lessen their dependence on groundwater. I think the city is in a very unique position that you have these existing basins that are not in an overdraft condition. You've got different options available to you in terms of state water, in terms of desal and everything else. So in terms of a SGMA position, I think the city's in a good position.
Let me just add a little bit to that. Under SGMA, both the Choro and Moro basins are low priority basins. Mm-hmm. They're not in overdraft. They're small basins. We are not subject to a groundwater management plan as of yet. Maybe in, I don't know, I don't have my state water crystal ball with me, 10 years, we might reach that level. Right now they're focusing on those basins that are in really severe problems. Locally, those would be the Paso Robles groundwater basin, mm-hmm. And the Santa Maria River groundwater basin are the two that are highly impacted due to excessive pumping.
Yeah.
Okay. Water rights on Choro Creek and Toro Creek. Are there any issues with us utilizing the water as it flows down on those creeks?
Both the the groundwater and the surface water are regulated by state board. Our groundwater is not kind of what you would think of as a traditional groundwater basin, basically a bowl that fills up. These are porous soils around a flowing creek. So the groundwater basin also flows. So it's regulated more like a surface water than a bowl type groundwater basin. So all users, except for the riparian users, need to have a permit mm-hmm. to use that water. We have a permit to use that water up to 581 acre feet a year in Morrow and 1100 and something
14 or something.
Yes, out of the Choro basins. We have to make beneficial use of that water, and we have a 30-year period to make beneficial use of that water to make it permanent. The one advantage with using our treated wastewater and injecting it into the ground and withdrawing that, that's not subject to those permit rights. So we can extract that, all of that water back out mm-hmm. Where without limitation, where our appropriative rights are limited to the rights of the riparian come first and then the appropriators. So should we be subject to many years of drought, and I don't have a water crystal ball again, but there be problems in these groundwater basins, the riparian users always get their divide up that water supply. The appropriators like us, we're kind of lower on that list to use that water. There is an appropriator in the Choro basin that's has a pre-1914 right, so his appropriation rights is higher than our right there.
Okay. Yeah. How many riparian users are there associated with Choro Creek?
With
Basically all the farms along it?
Exactly, yeah.
Has there been any discussion with, is there any chance to, say, flood a field so the additional water could be added to the aquifer?
We've had hydrogeologists look at that. It's granular material that's in that underlying that creek does not come to the surface very many spots, so there's not a lot of good spots for percolation basins rather than injection well sites.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's see now. What is the quality of the local aquifers? You say there's nitrate contamination. Is that the major?
Nitrate and hardness. And,
yeah.
High TDS.
High TDS, yeah. Yeah, and I think there's some question as to kind of the long-term quality, because the way that the groundwater basin is currently used, Choro's not used, Morrow's used on a short-term basis. So there's some questions, and the reason why we have some of these sub-alternatives in the evaluation are what would be the impacts of continuous day-in and day-out pumping at the maximum rate in that Morrow basin, for example. What would be the impact on the nitrate concentration? Does the nitrate concentration go down as you pump more? Does it go up? And then what's the impact of seawater intrusion as you pump that groundwater basin more? Does the TDS start to increase? So those are some of the things that we're trying to capture with our evaluation, not knowing exactly what's going on below the groundwater surface in terms of quality. That's why we've left ourselves these different options to be able to come up with some recommendations, do some additional hydrogeo work to say, actually under this long-term condition, nitrates aren't really an issue, it really is salinity. So really alternative 2A now is not really appropriate, and if the city intends to use
Morrow well field on a continual basis, really 2B is the direction to go, and here's the cost.
Okay. In a previous lifetime, I did some stabilization work for Camp Slow, and they were trying to prevent chrome from the various mines on their property there from getting into the Choro Creek. Is chrome much of an issue in Choro Creek usually?
Damaris can probably answer that question. She prepares our consumer confidence report. So,
the chromium we've tested several different times, and we've never gotten anywhere near. So they've always actually pushed our requirements further down the line.
Okay. And then one last thought, which I'd asked, you know, with the stormwater discharge that we have, you've got that basin there over by the Cloisters, the park there. Would that assist in any way? Is ground saltwater intrusion an issue? And from what I just think I heard you say, is there is some concern about saltwater intrusion. Would that stormwater help in preventing some of the intrusion?
We'll be looking at that a little bit more as we kind of further the stormwater evaluation component, but I don't think that there's any hydraulic.
I think that there's no hydraulic connectivity between that basin and the aquifer. It's too far to the north.
Okay. Thank you. I do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. Christian?
Just a couple questions. Everything else was mostly answered. You know, when we talked about the projections, so it's a 20-year plan, so I assume that matches the city's growth plan. But, you know, we started this for a while, and it takes a while to get built and everything. So, I mean, is 20 years a far enough projection for this project? A lot of cities I worked with moved to a 25 to a 30-year projection for a growth module. So that's why I was just questioning, because, you know, by the time this is done, we're two more years out or two more years advanced towards that target date.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think one of the reasons why we chose to go with a 2040 time period is it's consistent with the general plan horizon. You're right. By the time that this project sunsets, it'll be a 22-year planning horizon from 2018 to 2040. Most of our infrastructure planning studies that we do. They typically have around a 20-year planning horizon because, again, it fits with a general plan update or the kind of the planning period associated with general plan.
Sure.
I just want to add just a little bit to that. The last time we did a water master plan was in the mid-90s. I think what we have to do is view this as a living document and continually update it rather than looking at them every 35-ish years.
Yeah, I think they're, you know, the term evergreen. I think they're an evergreen document, you know, that they continually have those revisions. Mm-hmm. So one of the things you said in the state allocation is, I don't know, we're somewhere around the 1,300 mark, and the 20-year projection put us at 1,400. Is there no chance of a reallocation? When did we arrive at that 1,314? You know, number from the state, and does that go under review for a reallocation, you know, based on your general plan?
That allocation was negotiated between various cities and the county in the early to mid 90s. There is the ability currently to reallocate amongst the Slow County subcontractors' water. The county also has an allocation of 25,000 acre feet a year. We're only delivering about 9,000 acre feet a year. Unfortunately, the pump station and pipelines and treatment plant that were built between here and Polonio Pass, somewhere between 46 and 41 out there, only serves that existing demand. Mm-hmm. So there would have to be some improvements to the infrastructure between here and there to deliver additional water, beyond about the 9,000 acre feet that's treated and delivered to this county.
To us, yeah, okay. The other thing is, I know one thing you said is the per capita usage, and I appreciate the little chart there showing where we were. There was a comment that we'll never see those high numbers again. So I was wondering what was the rule of thumb, thinking that, you know, we've really trained consumption amongst the constituents in our city, or where do we stand with making that assumption?
Yeah. I think, you know, it's interesting because we're looking at this for a number of different communities right now, and it's a little bit of we're kind of in a little bit of an experimental stage, and I think Damaris can talk a little bit to some of the recent trends. And I think that kind of the common thought in the industry is we won't bounce all the way back up to where we were, but I think the common thought seems to be that we're not going to be as low as we were when we had the mandatory reductions 2014, 2015. And so it's going to be somewhere in between that high of, I think it was 116 gallons per capita day, but it likely is not going to dip below or maintain below 100. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to find somewhere in there. And then Damaris, if you want to talk to.
So is that also just based off of, learning, and then obviously some of the older homes going through with the new water saving devices and all
correct.
The practices?
That has a lot to do with it. Yeah. Unlikely folks will remove their low flow toilets to put back in the if you could find one higher flow toilet. And then people have made significant investments in landscaping, actually removing water intensive landscaping and replacing it. So there's been physical improvements done that don't lend themselves to conversion back to higher water usage. And rates probably will have a lot to do with
sure,
it. As water becomes more expensive, you become more frugal with your water use.
And just two other quick questions. So one, we keep hearing about that we have a desal plant and it can only be used on emergency basis only. And so wasn't really quite sure what the exact reason for that was or the concern. Mm-hmm. We say that there's some flooding concerns or some other concerns, but it's an existing structure. It's clearly there and clearly had homework done when it was built and placed in that location. So what's the main determining factor from the Coastal Commission that can't be ran other than an emergency basis?
I would just say really quickly, I think there's three things that play into the current state of the Ocean Desal Facility, or how it can be utilized within the city's current infrastructure as an emergency. I think part of it is the coastal permit. Part of it is the fact that it hasn't been exercised, and the age of those vessels. It's something that we recently found at Santa Barbara, as they had a similar situation with an old facility, high pressure facility. And everybody got around and looked at the vessels. The vessels look to be in good shape, but when they're operating at such high pressures and they're that old and they haven't been exercised, there's a real big safety concern. So they made the decision there to replace a number of Ocean Desal RO racks that look to be in good shape, that didn't have very many hours on them for that reason. So there's a safety concern there. And then the other issue is the Coastal Commission and the flooding sea level rise, which Rob can talk to a little bit more.
Yes, and in addition to those issues, our existing outfall for the desal plant is in the channel that used to be the power plant discharge. Mm-hmm. Water Quality Control Board is concerned about a long-term constant discharge to that area. They would like that discharge to occur further out into the ocean, so that it can, the thought is it would become better mixed in that deeper ocean environment rather than being right there on the beach, basically. The coastal permit, which is not insurmountable, we've talked with Coastal, they They recognize the need for that facility. They would work with us on permitting a permanent facility there. But certain improvements have to be done also to do that.
Mm-hmm. And then you said both on the Moro and the Choro fields, you know, with the nitrates and the salination or the salt levels, your study is going to check on those levels, you know, in a model for if they were ran every day pumping or if they were ran with injection wells. Is that correct? It's going to see what it would possibly do to both those levels.
Oh, we're currently not doing that modeling effort. So without having that information, we're going to kind of run several different options that are going to cover the spectrum of what the water quality could be, and then that's something that we've been talking with staff about is, can there be some additional hydrogeo work that's done to help pinpoint exactly what the water quality would be under a long-term pumping scenario? And then, you know, how does that, again, how does that relate to the WRF project? Because there's additional groundwater modeling work that's going to be done to support that project. And so how can that maybe fit in with that analysis?
Okay, thank you.
Just to add to that, we want to dovetail those work efforts so that we're not doing duplicative work efforts. And so writing the scope of work so that we cover what we need to have done, but we're not doing it twice.
Okay, Jan? Okay, Steve?
Okay. I think I understand where you're going, talking about the saltwater RO units. And the fact they only allow the emergency use of it, it's more of an environmental concern because you're dumping your brine into that channel. Is that correct? I mean, is that the long and the short of it, or is there
that,
other
that's one of the concerns? The other concern is its physical location.
No, let's say it's moved if you had to replace the U. See, I'm sitting there looking at why would we rebuild a saltwater RO unit if we're not going to be able to use it at the end of the day. This is what's already happened to the city of Morro Bay for the most part. It's a facility that hasn't been run, as best I understand, from your consultant. And that's one of the reasons why it doesn't work now. The brackish water gets used more often. And so, you know, I like to put my money with the things that you honestly have a halfway chance of achieving through the regulatory side of this. So I guess what I'm trying to sort through is it just that channeling and you're saying, no, there are other issues, location is one of them.
Location will be an issue.
And safety of the equipment that's present.
Correct. Probably the easiest to solve is the ocean discharge. I mean, physically, there's some institutional issues because we share the outfall, but basically discharging into our existing sewer outfall that's already offshore.
Now, do they have the same problem with the brackish RO unit that's mainly removing nitrates as opposed to salinity, correct?
It's a lower salt level.
I mean, do they have any problem with you dumping into the channel?
Regional board does, if it's long-term.
Sorry, Rob, I'm not trying to be confrontational.
No.
I'm trying to get in my mind
what
exactly, at the end of the day, you're going to be allowed to do at the end of this, and that's why I'm asking.
So long-term persistent use, both agencies would like to see the be consistent with the ocean plan and to have a deeper water outfall.
So if you started to use the brackish system, you'd still have to do something about the channeling.
Yeah, and that will show up in the about, and that's one of the reasons why we included that implementation criteria in the evaluation. So that's
and the safety
that's where
isn't a real
included.
Concern of the vessels that are used for the brackish system.
It's a lower pressure system. It's a newer
so it's
system.
A
it's exercised.
System,
yeah, there's a lot of different reasons why. Yeah.
And then the second one is pulling from the wells themselves. As I understand, we could go 500 plus or minus acre feet out of the Moro Creek. We have the rights to do so. Is that unrestricted rights, or is it like Choro where you got to have 1.6 CFS coming down the road?
That's unrestricted.
Unrestricted. There is an instantaneous limit that so you can pull a 581 acre feet over the course of a year, but there's an instantaneous limit on how much you can extract at any given time.
But at the end of the day, you can pull almost half of the water needs of Morro Bay from Morro Creek should you choose to do so. And right now, I understand the crystal ball with the state. I know how this goes, Rob. In the here and the now, they would allow you to pull out 500 acre feet.
Correct. Okay. And that's traditionally prior to the city's being on state water and the desal plant, that's traditionally where our water came from, is the Moro and the Choro aquifers.
Now, on the Choro side, and this is the one that concerns me, is I don't feel it's guaranteed water rights, because you have to have that 1.6 CFS coming down the creek before you could pull the first gallon of water out of your wells. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, and I got a feeling most of the year there's not 1.6 CFS coming down Choro Creek. Is that a pretty safe bet?
Correct.
In dry years, yes. In wetter years, we...
Well, I believe in the winter you probably can do
when it. We don't need the water, it's flowing really
right.
good.
Yeah. And I guess in my mind is Choro Creek, for me, is not a real option unless you're either augmenting it with, say, the effluent from the wastewater treatment plant, or you create a whole new reservoir and pump all your 1100 CFS or whatever they allow in the winter when it's flowing at 1.6. Is that a fair surmisal of the only way Choro Creek's really going to work?
Yes, Choro Correct. Creek would work much better if we had a storage reservoir to pump
in the
low
wet
demand,
weather.
wet weather and use it during the summertime.
Yeah, like I say, I'm not trying to be confrontational. Yeah. I'm just trying to get my, in my mind exactly what our rights are, because every time we kind of go through this, we find ourselves up against either an environmental concern or a state regulatory concern that we can't do this. And I just hate to see us chasing something that at the end of the day is doomed to failure. So in the case of Choro Creek, if we did divert the water, not go back to Moro Creek area with indirect potable, injection, you could make Choro Creek work in that vein. This next question I have regarding Choro Creek is where the wells are located, do they actually have a transmission line that takes you back to the RO units, or does it just feed into the distribution system of the city? Do you follow what I mean? I'm trying to figure out if you have to treat the Choro water, do you have to build a new treatment facility, or build a whole new transmission line?
I think it's
across
back there. Town? Yeah.
It does go into the distribution system. There'd have to be some piping modification. We'd have to build some pipeline to. There's customers.
You presently don't have a
Correct.
Transmission line.
Correct.
Okay. Correct. And then the last question, and this is off path of all the rest, is does the Moro Bay system presently meet the fire flow storage requirements required by the state? We do.
That's part of the evaluation.
Yeah, we'll be looking
okay,
at that.
Okay, so I'm ahead
analysis.
Of the game
yeah.
on you.
Yeah,
there.
We'll be
okay.
doing that storage analysis. And looking
oh,
at
okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
No problem.
Okay, and I only have a couple questions on the 2B, the nitrate treatment. You mentioned that it was lower operational costs. What about capital costs versus the upgrading and maintaining existing facility? How much of a capital cost difference is there?
Well, that's what we're looking at right now. And again, if we had a greenfield site and we said, okay, we don't have any infrastructure right now to, say the brackish water RO system didn't exist, and we were looking at ways to go from an untreated Moro water to something that we could put into the distribution system, likely on a capital and O&M cost basis, the nitrogen some type of nitrogen biologically based treatment system would be cheaper to both on a capital basis as well as a continual O&M basis. But the complicating factor is the existing infrastructure the city already has, and how does that play into the life cycle cost? So with the use of those existing RO membranes that are currently in use, that likely drives the capital cost piece down lower than nitrate treatment. But then looking at over a 20-year planning horizon, what does that difference in O&M do so that at the end of the 20-year, you look at a present value cost and say, okay, on the life cycle, RO, the existing RO or use of the existing RO treatment technology may still be cheaper, and that's what we're running through that analysis right now.
Okay.
Yeah, the complicating factor is that existing infrastructure. Not complicating, it's a good thing, but
yeah. I was at a program recently that was talking about some unintended consequences of injection of high purity water back into aquifers, dealing with, you know, corrosive or the high purity water causing corrosion in casings, and also interactions with the aquifer. Let's see, what was it? I'm not that strong on the chemistry.
Arsenic, potentially.
The arsenic potential, yeah. Yes. Yeah. What kind of analysis is going to be presented in, or is that going to be a part of this report that you're going to be presenting?
So I would say that's not something that we're going to be looking at. Now, it's something that the design build engineer on the wharf project will be looking at. A very important part of any potable reuse project where you're doing injection, any potable reuse project in general, because you're producing such an aggressive water, you need to condition it back down and try to get the chemistry as close as you possibly can to the ambient groundwater. And so that's something that that design engineer will be looking at. It's a challenge, but it's something that can be overcome. It's something that we're looking at for another project here on the Central Coast right now with their IPR project, is what does that water chemistry look like? What do we need to do to make that water chemistry as similar as possible to avoid liberation of arsenic and corrosion and those kinds of things? But that's a good concern, and definitely something that will need to be looked at as part of the final design for that project.
Good, thank you. Are there any additional questions that have come up from board members?
I just wanted to say thank you. It was a very good presentation. Oh,
thank you. Yep. Appreciate it. Good questions. Thanks.
Rob, do you have anything else on this agenda item?
If the board members have any input that we could take away from this, we would gladly receive that, other than the questions that you've presented to us. We've taken some notes and probably have to listen to the minutes again to confirm our notes, but maybe one more time through the panel to make sure that you've asked all concerns, your questions, like, or have any other concerns that we might want to look at.
One more
looks
question.
Like John has something.
Just one question was, is it feasible to buy any riparian rights on Toro Creek or Toro Creek?
We can't buy riparian rights, unfortunately, and cities really can't get riparian rights because our city doesn't overlie the basin, and we're not using it for beneficial use within that groundwater basin.
Okay.
One more quick question, if I could, Rob. If you have the brackish reverse osmosis system in full operation, would it generate enough water to meet the needs of the city in a year?
Ninety percent of the time, so average.
Oh, okay.
But on high demand days.
What I'm driving at is there a real need for the salt water, you know, RO system? Because it's one that sounds like it's going to have to be totally replaced. If you have the ability and you do the indirect potable reuse from the wastewater treatment plant, would the brackish water system carry this town if you were living in a vacuum and you weren't getting any state water?
If I had my crystal ball again, I would say that the saltwater desal is going to score pretty low.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Okay, seeing no other questions, we'll move on to the next item, which is potential future agenda items. Rob, do you have anything that you have scheduled for the December meeting?
T- Typically, we don't have a December meeting because of its occurrence in the middle of the month. So we usually typically take a hiatus for December and rejoin in January.
Okay. So you don't have anything critical?
Nothing for December. So we'll go through our existing work program and bring forward likely the final version of the policy and guidelines for that will be one item. We'll likely have an update of the short-range transit plan, and we'll review our work program and bring those items that are ready to bring forward at that time.
Okay, thank you very much. If there are no emergency items that come up for December, we will adjourn to the January 17th, 2018 meeting. Thank you.